Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Very well, Ken. Very well. I thought last week five win, although the defense sprung some leaks, was perhaps one of the most encouraging regular season games I've seen from the Ravens. To see them be able to come from behind through the air in the fourth quarter, 42 pass attempts for 348 yards, 8.3 yards per play, versus 34 rushes for 175 at 5.1. I think that bodes really well for the future. It gives me some encouragement that they are going to be able to overcome the negative game scripts that have bounced them out of the playoffs.
That is, by the way, remarkable balance for a negative game script. For a game where you trail most of the second half and you still end up with 42 passes and or actually, I guess there's 43 pass plays, including the sack, and 34 runs. That's fantastic. So,
yes.
Very nice indeed. I think we got to start at the top here, though. There is some significant dysfunction around the entire league, but it seems to be a maelstrom around New York City right now, and the problems with Saleh getting fired, reportedly by ownership. Aaron Rodgers saying he had nothing to do with it, which I don't think anybody believes.
it seems to be almost like a LeBron James situation with Aaron Rodgers calling the shots as far as personnel, as far as calling the plays at the line. And the rumor I heard was that their owner, who was, I believe, has ties to the British England, was just embarrassed.
Yeah, there may have been something else too. And I have not verified this. I'm even hesitant to even say it, but apparently Saleh may have worn a Lebanese flag on the side of his.
I saw that. Yeah. That apparently was is encouraged by the league. I think Sirianni wears an Italian flag on his. I don't know what to make of that, but I didn't think Saleh was the problem there. They have a high-priced offense that's not performing. Right.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, a fine coach. In fact, if he'd have been a guy that the Ravens wanted to bring in for Dean Pease to play the Dean Pease role of advisor, that would have been, I think, very exciting for the Ravens to pick up a coach of his quality. But we'll move on to Dean, hired as a consultant for Zach Orr. As my understanding, and they have not been really clear about exactly what his duties are. He's going to be at practice. Mm-hmm. Not sure if he's going to be at the games yet or not. They haven't said that. By the way, Dean Pease is now 75 years old for what it's worth to people. What's your take on this situation?
I'm glad to see it. I'm glad to see it off the jump, off the top. Zach Orr, I thought it was a questionable hire at the time due to his inexperience. Just for comparison's sake, the Ravens obviously lost McDonald, left to become a head coach, but the Seahawks currently rank 13th in defensive DVOA. The Ravens are 14th. Anthony Weaver went to Miami 25th in defensive DVOA. But the one that I kind of liked was Denard Wilson, who went to Tennessee, and he's got the 9th best defensive DVOA with a much less talented cast than what Orr has been working with. So I think he needed some help, and I really hope that Dean Pease can help him with the game planning specifically.
Yeah, I think they've done some good things here, and Zach has already made adjustments to the defense, and the big one being moving to dime defense from the committed nickel. I don't even really believe that Trenton Simpson was an enormous problem, but if other teams are starting to pick on him, you don't want that to become a big problem where both inside linebackers get picked on. Plus, some of it is you just want to find a great spot for Kyle Hamilton to impact the game. And I think that was a very smart move. I think they did some different things with pass rush. That, unfortunately, I don't believe is where Pease is going to add a lot to any kind of situation with Orr. He's very adaptable, by the way, on a week-to-week basis, but he was never a guy who had a really complex, high-pressure pass rush scheme. And that's something that that the Ravens really haven't had outside of Martindale. The nice thing, McDonald was good because there was enough variation in it, but he always seemed to also have a budget for the number of blitzes he was willing to run in a single game. Whatever the budget was for Martindale, he was exercising deficit spending. To say the least, he was
really Well, and that last year, you know, he did get, you know, the secondary was just decimated with injuries. So, you know, I don't think the Ravens have really had any bad defensive coordinators. Maybe Madison would be up there, but I think Pease has a bad rap. It was time to move on at the time, but, you know, he was defensive coordinator from 2012 to 17. Then he went to Tennessee for 2018 and 19, and he still had it. He came up with that game plan that limited the 2019 Ravens juggernaut to what? Those are 13 points at home. You know, he wasn't like he was rolling out a bunch of superstars on the defensive side. They had some players, but they weren't a loaded defense. Then he went to Atlanta and then from 21 and 22, and he had 1 year off. And I think this is a perfect spot for him to, you know, he's the bend, don't break kind of guy. Well, they won a Super Bowl bending and not breaking. And the secondary has been breaking too much lately. So I'm happy to bend at this point, win the game on offense, limit the explosives on defense. And you got to get more production out of this high-priced secondary at this point, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I do think I am not convinced that this team has figured out how much they require variation on defense. So variance on defense, very important. And the defenses live by it. And particularly when your defense is not at the hyper elite level that the Ravens have been in 23, say, or either, you know, even for the second half of 22 under McDonald as well. You know, you really need it all that much more. You need to figure out how to seek that variance out. And in particular, it's a narcotic of dependency to want to fall back into prevent defenses to try and hold a lead, which is that's been, you know, well proven not to deliver variance, and it'll end up burning you in all likelihood. But the Ravens need to figure out how to get it. And if they're going to have a defense that is, it's not bad by any stretch. They're an above average defense, but you know, 10th, 8th in the league is where I'd expect them to finish. They're still going to need a lot of seek out that variance. And that means you probably need to run more pressure. I actually really liked what I saw from the Bengals this last week, and that's really saying something. But they ran out 15 simulated pressures where they dropped two guys off the line of scrimmage, two plus off the line of scrimmage, more if you count the ones. I don't, but a lot of people do. So those two-man simulated pressures, very effective at holding down Lamar Jackson. He only had 5.5 yards per throw on those. So I would really like to find a way to increase that. And I'd really like that to be more of the stated defensive philosophy of the team. Like you don't have to, I guess, you know, you tell the whole league that, then, you know, you want to do some things that you're gambling and you're encouraging your players to gamble. It doesn't even have to be stated. It just has to be observable in terms of what they're doing, that they're really going out and seeking this. And I think that, you know, the blitz was shut down despite effectiveness from Orr in this last week. I think he's been telling players on the field not to stunt because of the very limited number of total stunts we've seen. That changed in the second half in this last game against the Bengals. Mm-hmm. But I want to see more of that. I want to see more risk taking on defense.
Yes, and to the maybe a concerning point, Pease towards the end of his tenure, coverage in the middle of the field, especially against tight ends, was problematic, even with some pretty good safeties and inside linebackers. And we're seeing that same problem again this year. I think that's really the place that they need to clean it up. But on the bright side, you know, maybe Pease handles the nuts and bolts part of the game plan and allows Orr to tap into some of that creativity that made McDonald so great and Anarumo tapped into last week as well.
We'll see if this is truly a game plan thing. I almost see him as a quality control guy, as in, you know, Eddie Jackson, I see what's wrong with you now. You got to do these things because you're in danger right now of losing your spot. But make sure that you're here and here and here and here on these various looks and reading your keys right. I I think it's going to still be Orr, you know, deriving the game plan. And I don't know how much what the volume of the whisper will be of Pease in Orr's ear. But if he's just around to correct, you know, why breakdowns are occurring and quality control and maybe handling some communication things better, then I'm all positive on that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Agreed.
All right, let's move on. We'll talk about, I want to get to the injury report last because we haven't actually seen it posted yet, I don't believe, but we'll come back to it. Yannick Ngakoue, he was elevated for the first time, played pretty well, had a quarterback hit in the game. What it did mean is Adisa Isaac had to take a seat. And it begs the question of, do the Ravens actually have too many outside linebackers on the roster?
I don't necessarily think so, but I do think Ngakoue looked better than I expected, to be frank. And he also hypothetically at least caught into David Ojabo's snaps. He went from 21 snaps in week 4 to 14 snaps in week 5. I don't think you can necessarily have too many outside backers. I'd much rather carry an extra outside backer versus a special teams only player.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You got my vote there. Ojabo, despite his limited snap total, had one of the really great plays of the game. I think it was a little under the radar. Set the pick for Madubuike's S-7 that got the Bengals behind the chains on that last drive of regulation. They had to punt two plays later. So they threw an incomplete pass on 2nd and 17. Then they had to run the football on third down, essentially giving up just to run time off the clock and make sure the Ravens didn't have time to drive for a field goal. So that was probably one of the game's biggest plays. It might have been, you know, their biggest defensive play other than Humphrey's interception.
Yes, agreed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess we could fold in the mailbag question at this juncture because it's specifically about Ojabo, and I'll pull it up here. It's from Angelov85. Any chance Yannick will be signed to the permanent roster given the injuries in Dallas and Miami and a solid production? Does it make sense to protect him?
I think there's other practical reasons why they would elevate him to the permanent roster. Because, okay, if they left Yannick Ngakoue on the practice squad for another week and they elevated him, I don't think anybody's going to come and get him. But if someone does come looking for him, you know, he'll probably say to the Ravens, hey, look, you know, the Raiders are after me here. Do you want to sign me permanently? Got to be part of Yannick's motivation at this point in his career has probably got to be to get a ring, I would think. So I would think he's going to at least give the Ravens a chance to sign them. And I don't think there's anybody showing up with a big bag of money to get him after what he's done.
No. Yeah.
So just
as a way to protect him, though.
Yeah, I think I'll give you another practical reason why it may happen is the Ravens need another running back now to be elevated from the practice squad or to be put on the roster. But they're done 3 elevations in Collier, 3 elevations with Kelly. After Collier's fumble, I think he's gone from the roster. Yeah. He'll be replaced by somebody else. I'm surprised it hasn't already happened. Maybe Ali is truly ready to go.
That would be my guess.
Yeah. If that's true, then he has to really come back to the roster or be exposed to waivers. So that leaves Yannick as one of 2 elevations, along with potentially a 5th defensive lineman this week with Broderick Washington on the injury report now.
Right. Most likely Wormley, I would imagine. I just think they can shed, whether it's Kane or Braid or Ross, one of those players can be stashed in a way to make the defense and the offense better at the expense of the special teams, because the kickoff is just not materializing into something they can take advantage of.
Right. I completely agree. Let's see. Anything else we need to talk about on the practice squad? I don't think so. I know you had a point to make about Mark Andrews and his relative playing time.
Yeah, just on the topic of the usage, as we were talking about the outside linebackers, I thought it was interesting. Week 4, you had a run-heavy game script. Week 5, you had a pass-heavy game script. Both weeks likely outsnapped Andrews, and Kolar is eating into his workload. And Pat Ricard, 35 snaps in week 4, 25 snaps still in week 5. Andrews offers $11 million in cap savings if Carter traded after this season. And at this point, it seems that likely is the tight end one Andrews is competing, but he's not a perfect match for 12 personnel because you want somebody that's a little bit better blocker like a Kolar or a Ricard. So I just thought that was interesting. We'll see how that, you know, evolves throughout the rest of the season. But early signs are that this may be Mark's last year in Baltimore.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think this is going to be a really hard pill for probably Lamar to swallow. But I think Lamar is now at a point where he's very comfortable with Isaiah Likely. Mm-hmm. He's probably has to get to the point where he's comfortable with the business of football. And honestly, it may be a player. There's a lot of players the Ravens need to sign, by the way. Travis Jones, this is the opportunity to sign Travis Jones if they're going to be able to do it. It's the opportunity to sign Isaiah Likely, by the way, also, is to sign him early now. Add years to the end of his contract, and he'll be here for a long time. That could potentially be a great move for the Ravens. They have to decide on Ronnie Stanley and if they're going to pay him or if they need that money to pay a different left tackle. But I think Ronnie might be the cheapest alternative of the group. And then they have to we've talked about this before, last week, but they have others that I'm forgetting right now that are right there.
Well, Odafe Owe, I think, has to be
a priority. Yeah, Odafe, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Linderbaum, too. So there's a lot of mouths in the pipeline right now. And sometimes you have to make those tough decisions. Better a year too early than a year too late, as Ozzie always said.
Yeah. The point I think maybe we're both getting to here is that I don't think there's going to be a big outside the organization signing. I think the big signings will be inside the organization come this offseason. And there's going to be some absolutely tears shed over players lost in free agency, but it cannot be helped if you want to have a level cap, you know, approach to your roster management. So
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I do have one more year until they have to take care of Kyle Hamilton. It seems strange because Hamilton and Linderbaum were signed the same or were drafted the same year, but Linderbaum, because he would make left tackle money essentially under the fifth year option, really has to be signed a year earlier.
Right. They lump all offensive linemen into one position group, and safety is one of the most depressed positions. So Hamilton's value at his fifth year option money. Just back to Andrews again, for 26 snaps and 43 snaps, I don't think he's worth that kind of expenditure when you have these other players that are outproducing him. And I think it's actually a good thing for the Ravens offense as a whole that Lamar isn't force feeding it to Mark so much. It's allowed them to diversify target share and become more unpredictable.
Big element of growth in Lamar, too. It's not just a matter of Andrews hasn't been on the field. I think he's been much better at finding other extended targets. And I'm so positive on that. The other thing that came out of this game that was really, really positive on was how he dealt with all that simulated pressure that we talked about earlier. Because if you look back to 2021 and that game in Miami, he had no idea what to do with it. And not only in this game, but not only did he do a good job in terms of finding open receivers and escaping pressure he knew was coming, he also did a good job of assigning blockers as needed to take care of it. And they really did a very good job blocking it up, as well as can be hoped when the other team shows aid at the line of scrimmage so regularly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Lamar had a marvelous game, and it seems that Monken has found his groove now. It took a little while to figure out how to kind of incorporate Derrick Henry and start going under center more, et cetera. But great showing. You know, it's not that Cincinnati has a world beater defense, but on the road and in the division, it was a tremendous performance.
All right. One signing off the practice squad, Kadar Holman was lost. That is a low key bummer. Now, Kadar Holman is a outside cornerback. He can also probably play a little bit of slot for you. And you don't want to lose those guys if you can. But the Ravens, outside corner depth was very good. And it really is not a complete shock that he'd be gone. He's not a young guy. He's been in the league, I think, for 5 or 6 years now and out of Toledo. But we came into the league as a well-thought-of prospect with extremely good speed at 4.39. It's just a shame that he's gone. Also coupled with bad news with JAD going to IR, it hurts just that much more because they really are short. They're closer to having TJ Tampa on the field. But it could be less of an issue if Maulette returns because it will give them a little more flexibility to have Humphrey play on the outside more, say, than they otherwise would.
Right. I guess it remains to be seen if JAD can return, because I believe it was a concussion. So that wouldn't necessarily be considered a season-ending injury. Maybe they just needed the roster space. I'm not so sorry to see Holtman go, because I don't know how much he really was a key contributor on, or potential contributor on defense. You do want to see Tampa get some reps here. But yeah, he was on the practice squad. Texas signed him to their active roster. They're 53. You can't keep him at that point. I guess in a corresponding move, Pepe Williams was brought back to also, I guess, bolster that organizational depth at the cornerback position. I don't see much room at nickel, but if Mollett, who apparently still wasn't practicing today on Thursday, if he suffers a setback or something, it's nice to have somebody that knows the system on the P squad.
Yeah, and knows how to play special teams, which is probably what they brought him in for. They elevated Holman, I think, three times for special teams usage yep. only. So he's kind of a lesser version of Holman. The reason I say that is probably every good bit as good as special teams player, or pretty close anyway, such as much as special teams matters. But he's really only a slot guy. He's not an outside corner. So that's the little bit of loss there.
And Bump Cooper, I believe, is still on the practice squad as well.
Yeah, he could be lost.
Verify that. Yes, it looks like he is still with the team. So in the event of Armageddon at the cornerback position, maybe you could rely on him as well.
Yeah.
I thought he outplayed Pepe in the preseason.
Completely agree. Yeah. And but the guys you want to use your PS, okay, it doesn't mean necessarily they would want to use a PS activation on.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Somebody like Cooper, even though there's some value potentially at cornerback, but they probably would still go with Pepe because of his knowledge of special teams, even though they know they're getting less at corner. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
All right. We got the trade deadline coming up now in 3 weeks, I believe. Maybe 3 weeks and 3 days or so, or 3 weeks and 5 days. Where do you see the Ravens' biggest needs coming up?
From a pure production of what we've seen so far standpoint, I would say probably the safety position, because Marcus Williams just has not lived up to his talent or his potential this season. It's been a tough year for him. I was so excited when they first signed him. I thought it was one of the steals of free agency. Mm-hmm. And injuries have just kind of, I don't know if it's injuries, I don't know if it's miscommunications with the new coordinator, but he's just not played great. So that would probably be the one, but I think it'd be hard to sit him down. I did see a chart, they put out, they have so many analytical charts they put out now, but it cross-sectioned cover or separation allowed in coverage with on-ball production. As a measure of safety. And both Eddie Jackson and Marcus Williams were right kind of in the middle of the chart, middle of the road. You're not paying Marcus Williams to be a middle of the road kind of guy. And Kyle Hamilton was slightly better, I believe, in the separation, but about equal on the on-ball production. So it's not like they've been totally horrendous, but we expected a lot more out of Marcus this year.
Okay, so I have all kinds of methodology questions which come up when I see charts like that. And so I like to bring people on the show and have them explain it. We're going to have, by the way, we're going to have Kevin Cole on doing a film study short next week on his multiply adjusted let me make sure I have this right here. Dividing of responsibility between sacks between the quarterback and the offensive line. So that should be interesting, but there's
very interesting like
six or seven adjustments that go with that, that make you just throw your arms up and wonder, okay, what the hell is the methodology? But he's going to come on and explain it on the show. I'm very suspicious, I'll just say, of separation metrics. I'm also very suspicious of targets assigned.
Yes.
Specifically by PFF to safeties. And it's really only to safeties well, I guess linebackers also, because the throws between level two and level three, they typically will assign it to the underneath coverage guy in zone. So that means a linebacker is getting an assignment for that when a safety is the player who's, you know, may or may not be more able to do anything about it. And right. I think that's really been the problem, is they're playing too far off and have been too soft in coverages. I also would say I haven't been happy with the amount that Jackson specifically has been able to get into a good bracket on his side with whatever receiver is being thrown to. And we've seen it less from Marcus Williams as well. That's been something he's been great at in the past. Great yes. loose bracket safety. This is my long-winded way of saying I completely agree that safety is the position they need to maybe try and go out and get someone. I have three conditions for it. Mm-hmm. I want it to be a free safety. That's number one. I do not want a strong safety guy. I'll take a split field guy. But the reason it needs to be a free safety is because Marcus Williams has had some injury problems. Eddie Jackson has now proven to me that he can't step in for Marcus Williams as free safety. So I want somebody who can in case there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And number two is I think need a replacement for Eddie Jackson ASAP on the split field role. So a free safety is always better than that, than a strong safety. Ideally, it would not be a guy who's a great run fitter and a mediocre coverage guy. I want a pure ball hawk, you know, on the back end to support what the Ravens try and do. And then the other big thing is, you know, if I don't get that guy, then I'm concerned about the flexibility of Washington and Hamilton. And it's not just Hamilton anymore. Washington's proven to be so good in the slot. I'd like to see him be able to continue there and not be forced into a back end role.
I agree with you completely all the way around there. Definitely free safety is there's very little value in a box safety. The difference between an average box safety and a top end box safety is slim. I think Washington could potentially be a Jackson replacement. I think they're experimenting a little bit there right now. But I do agree with you as far as the space between the linebackers and the safeties has been too much. And that was really something I thought that McDonald did a terrific job of. He really, found ways to put the safeties in position. And that was a complaint of mine for many years, obviously, with but Ed Reed, watching Ed Reed, you expect high level safety play, and they didn't have it for a long time. And they did recently. And we don't want to go back to those dark times, especially when you're paying Marcus Williams $14 million a year.
Yeah, he definitely is one of the players. If you're looking at other trade needs, I've got two other positions that I would have the Ravens look at. Unfortunately, most of the Twitterverse is not going to like me for it, but offensive line would really be my next position. I think they could really still use another interior backup. And I don't think it even needs to be a great one. It could be a practice squad guy, but if a great one became available, if a great guard on a bad team is suddenly available, it could be expensive, but it might be the right call.
I could see it. I'm curious to see what the alignment is going to be this week if Voorhees is able to suit up. You don't want to be have issues at both guard spots. That's a tough place. You can get away with one guard that's subpar, and you can cover up and slide protection and chip or keep a set blocker in the backfield. But when you have it on both sides, that really does make it tough. And I don't know what guards, you know, trying to find a guard from a team that's selling may be tough. I think most teams that are sellers are in pretty dire straits at guard. But I'd be on board for that. I would.
And I guess another possibility is at wide receiver. Now, I know everybody wants who they think is a number one receiver in the league like now. And sometimes they just want any guy who was a number one receiver 5 years ago. I don't want that. The guy I want is a gadget player who will take the workload off that specific component of workload off Zay Flowers' plate and allow him to run more routes down the field. Right now, I hoped Deonte Hardy could be that guy. That has not been the case so far. He hasn't been a guy who's contributed anything at all to the offense, 5 or 6 snaps the whole year at this point. They need to find somebody who can do that. Justice Hill, by the way, fantastic in that role. They finally got to 2 snaps of pony backfield this week. Mm-hmm. But I also think when you've only got 2 running backs, I think it's too much to ask for Hill to take a gadget role, a full-time, you know, a halftime running back role, and become a much more touch guy in addition to being a guy who's used 16 times as a blocker, a pass blocker in this last game.
Yeah, he's wearing a lot of hats lately, and he earned that contract extension. Hopefully, in an ideal world, Keaton Mitchell, fingers crossed, is that player in the second half of the season. I would probably put receiver above. I could go either way, but receiver certainly in my top 3. I think I mentioned it last week or the week before when we touched on this. I'm looking for a different skill set. I'm looking for a burner. I'm looking for a vertical player. One player, Rashid Shaheed from the New Orleans Saints, is the sort of guy that I think can help keep defenses honest, keep safeties honest in the postseason. And I think that dovetails into Jim Zipcoat's question, mailbag question. Is the Ravens' early offensive success number one in DVOA, yards per play, et cetera, with high usage of heavy personnel, 12, et cetera, fool's gold? When the going gets tough in the playoffs, will we discover that they don't have enough speed on the field versus the Chiefs? He hashtag free Tez Walker is how he ends that.
Well, that's the key player I wanted to bring.
That's where I was going to go to. If you're not going to start ramping Walker up, I think you do need to get a burner on the and Hardy is what he is. You know, if you got a cup bait with him, it is what it is.
Yeah. I don't think that they're tied to that. Of course, the fact that Tylan Wallace didn't make the fair catch appropriately in this last game and it really cost them is something that they're not happy about. They probably will want to have Hardy back there on kickoffs too. But yeah, I would agree. I think if there's a actual viable guy you want to use on offense, you go ahead and do it. Nelson Aguilar, by the way, also has had not a particularly great year so far.
Agreed.
So he's a guy whose role could be reduced, who could even be inactive for some games at some point if this kind of rate were to continue. So he did, you know, it's hard because his stats don't look terrible because he did have that one long 56-yard play, but, you know, he's 1 for 4 this week and he's had a lot more trouble both being on the field and in terms of yards per route run this year.
Agreed. Yeah, he's not an ideal wide receiver 3. I thought that all offseason. He's a wide receiver 4, and hopefully Tez can, you know, he's practice gets a, you know, starts practicing better and gets some experience, because there's a decent chance you're going to need him at some point. And if not him, somebody with that long speed skill set.
Yeah, I agree. All right. We had one more question, did we not?
Yeah, 2 more, actually. We caught one while we were streaming here. This is from Brett Hammonds. Bengals question. They seem so much better with Burrow, Chase, and Higgins all healthy. Does their offensive success this year make them go all in to keep those 3 together? Or does the lack of team success make them let Higgins go to get defensive depth?
I'll tell you what I'm reading from the Bengals boards. They definitely want to have Chase back, and they understand the need to pay Burrow. But there is a sharp division on whether or not to re-sign Higgins. And he's the question mark. It's a lot of money. He's probably a $20 to $25 million a year receiver. You're going to end up paying, and that's a you know, two star defensive players you can have for that same price. So if I were them, how would I do it? I'd probably split it up, and I wouldn't have all my eggs in the wide receiver basket. But he's right. Brett is absolutely right. I mean, the Bengals played their best offensive game against the Ravens in a very long time, probably since 2021. And the big factor that was different was all three of those guys being healthy at the same time.
Yes, I agree. If I was the Bengals general manager, I think I would keep Higgins. I saw a split that Ja'Marr Chase in the last three games with Higgins on the field, drawing attention of defenders, presumably, had literally double the production that he had in the three games when Higgins was injured or unavailable, the last three. So I think that would be their best chance to make a run. You have a prolific passing offense. You lean on Anarumo. You maybe devote most of your draft to the defense, and you try to make it work that way. If I was in their shoes, I would probably keep Higgins, specifically because I did see that. I think it was Chase has like 600 yards and five touchdowns in the last three with Higgins on the field, and 200 yards and one touchdown in the last three without Higgins, something along those lines.
There's a maybe another factor inside the division. If the Ravens are going to be their most significant competitor in the division, Higgins matches up extremely well against Brandon Stevens. This is unfortunate for the Ravens, but Brandon Stevens is not a guy who looks back for the football. So he lives in the pocket of the wide receiver and does a very good job of it, is able to make some plays on the ball. The taller that receiver is, the more difficult that makes that. But also, Higgins is an excellent back shoulder receiver, and Burrow's not afraid to throw to the back shoulder. And we saw Keon Coleman do that very well for Buffalo. And unfortunately, we saw some of that out of Higgins in this last game. And I'm afraid that's a characteristic that is going to be an Achilles for Stevens for the foreseeable future.
I agree. And not looking back for the football has been a problem for a lot of Ravens cornerbacks. The more we talk through this, I do think the loss of Denard Wilson as a secondary coach has had an impact the first five games this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, we got one more question, right?
Well, two more. They're
flying in.
I'm sorry, no, one more. This is from Lyman's Backpack. Can the Ravens be too good at run defense? By being so good against the run, do we force opposing teams to abandon the run early, leading to increased passing, which has a higher win probability added per play?
Okay, now that's an interesting question. Passes get added because a team is trailing. So I don't think it's ever a bad thing to try and get the lead in a football game. If it was, I mean, I throw my arms up in terms of what we're trying to accomplish. Are we really trying to, you know, just go neck and neck and stay a little bit behind the other team and then, you know, catch them at the end and win? I think you have to play for the lead, and then you do give up some additional expected points per play because the other team is passing more, and you have a less successful offense because you do things that reduce your points per play to try and close the game out. And that's why I'm not a real big fan of EPA added in the second half of NFL games. I don't think it's sure. The statistic is as meaningful, but the question is still good. I guess I would put it this way. I really love the way last year that McDonald sacrificed run defense in the name of better pass defense, more too high shells looks that would encourage the opposing run.
I completely agree there. That's something that Martindale did on occasion, depending on if a team was in the 4-minute drill, he would go to a very, he would entice the opposition to run. We've seen Bill Belichick do that before in certain games in the postseason. This is anecdotal. However, I believe the three best Ravens teams of the last 11 years, 2012, 2019, and 2023, were their three worst run defenses of the last 11 years. I don't know if that's coincidental but if you have a choice between being an elite pass defense or an elite run defense, the choice is clear.
Yeah, I agree on that wholeheartedly. All right, I think that brings us to the end of our agenda for the day. Always a pleasure.
Injury report.
Injury report. Go ahead. If you've got it.
Yeah. So this is not officially from the team, but this is per Jeff Zarebek, who observed practice on Thursday. Ronnie Stanley and Marlon Humphrey both dealing with ankles, both returned today on Thursday. Rashad Bateman dealing with the groin also returned. The only three DNPs were Salah, who's pretty insignificant, Malik Harrison with a groin, I believe, and Broderick Washington. I think that was a knee.
So the big concern there, first of all, Humphrey, Stanley, and Bateman, I don't have any information on whether those guys were full go or not. And it is a big deal whether they were limited. But even if they were limited, there's a good chance they're the DNP limited full go for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday that we often see in a player, a veteran player in particular, who's returning and working through a small injury. With Broderick Washington, I'm more concerned because he's the Ravens' fifth defensive lineman. The drop-off is down to Wormley. This is a game where I'd be very concerned about playing only four defensive linemen because I'm always concerned about that, but also because this is certainly a team that can run up a lot of offensive plays on you.
Yes, yes. I think it's going to be a challenge. The Ravens are rightfully favored, but this is one of the more competitive games in the next, on the horizon here. Washington has really off to a good start with Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels and McLaurin. And they could certainly put the test of defense, no question.
So it's really just did the show yesterday, one last thing with Slava. And I encourage people to take a listen to that if you can, because we listed from 15 to 1 the quality of the playoff contenders in the AFC. And there's going to be a bad team that makes the playoffs. That's all I got to say. Yeah. Or the Bengals are going to completely recover and make it, which is another possibility. But there is somebody like the Colts or the Jaguars, probably not the Jaguars, but the Colts or the Broncos or maybe even the Titans are going to come back and make the playoffs. And it's an ugly year for AFC playoffs. But on the good side, the Ravens don't really appear to be seriously challenged about getting in the playoffs somehow. They might not win the division, but they almost certainly make the playoffs.
It's a down year, I think, pretty much across the league. Who are the dominant teams? Minnesota's the dominant team? Or Kansas City squeaking by week after week? I know they looked a little better on Monday, but I think the Ravens have, even though they may not be as good as the 2023 Ravens, perhaps the rest of the league is also not as good as they were last year. And I think their chances are, after 5 weeks, I'm pretty optimistic about their chances.
Yeah, me too. I did see that Patrick Mahomes is still the favorite to win the MVP award right now, and by a significant margin. Like he's plus 230, and Lamar is plus 600 or 650, and it's not Burrow. Who's the other one who's in that?
Josh Allen,
Stroud. I think Stroud. But Josh Allen is close too. Anyway, all those guys. I think I might take any of the four over Mahomes. But the price I really want is the not Mahomes number right now. I mean, he's got six touchdowns, six interceptions, and an 88 passer rating.
Yeah, he's struggling. And his weapons aren't coming back anytime soon. So, it might be Stroud's turn. I think they don't want to give it to Lamar 2 years in a row. That's why his number's not what it should be. But if he keeps playing like this, they're not going to have a choice.
Yeah, I agree. All right, always a pleasure to talk football with you, Voss. Tell folks where they can find your material or talk football with you online.
Yeah, I am at Vasilis Fiamata, VASILISFIAMATA on Twitter. Obviously do this Friday morning GM show with Ken every week, and also have another podcast called The Ravens Way that I do with Yuri, but Yuri's currently in training for the Space Force. So we're trying to do once a month at this point. We'll see how it goes. We're both going through some significant changes and busy, but yeah, always like talking Ravens football. Thank you for the opportunity, Ken.
A pleasure. Any new news on the restaurant opening date or anything like that?
We don't quite have a date yet, but we passed the final inspection today. So we are got through another hurdle. So we're getting closer every day.
All right. Looking forward to it. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Had some great stuff recently come through. If you're just a fan of the show, we ask you like and subscribe if you're on YouTube, and just pass the word of mouth on. That's all I can ask in terms of finding somebody else who might enjoy this sort of content. I really appreciate having this discussion with Voss. I know there's been a lot of outpouring of support for this show in particular among the ones that I do, in terms of it being a fun one to listen to. For Voss Larikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.